We're now in the second case. Sorry, we're running a bit behind for a couple of reasons. All right, looks like we're all ready to roll here. Marshall, do you want to call our second case on this calendar?
Yes, calling case A211497 in the matter of the welfare of the child of BH and TDK parents.
All right. As you know, appellant has 15 minutes for the argument, respondent has 15 minutes, and appellant has 5 minutes for rebuttal. We will be posting an audio recording of this oral argument online after the end of our calendar. So please identify yourselves for the record as the first step. And with that, appellant, please proceed when you're ready.
Good morning, Your Honors. May it please the court, counsel. My name is Mary Casa, and I am the attorney for appellant father in this matter. There are two primary issues at hand in this appeal. The first centers around whether the agency complied with its duty to make reasonable efforts to reunify with father. And the second examines whether there was clear and convincing evidence to support the statutory basis for termination. Now, I believe that it's vital to focus our attention today on reasonable efforts issue because just 5 days after briefing concluded in this case, this court issued a precedential opinion in the case of in the matter of the welfare of the children of ADB. And I believe that case is directly on point to the reasonable efforts issue in this case. Now, in ADB, this court held that the district court abuses its discretion by making a post-trial determination that efforts to reunify were futile when the agency did not request a prima facie determination of futility based on the facts contained in its permanency petition. Your Honors, the precedential ADB decision compels this court to reverse and remand the district court's termination of my client's parental rights in this matter.
Could I ask you, though, I mean, is this case distinguishable in that there is not a decision independent of the court, as there was in ADB, that any efforts would be futile? I mean, is that a distinguishing fact here?
Your Honor, if I'm understanding your question correctly, I actually reviewed all of the orders yesterday prior to the entry of the termination order, and not in a single order prior to the termination order was a futility determined requested or asked for or made. And I think that was the same case in ADB.
In ADB, I mean, it sounds like they didn't do anything. They didn't do a case plan. They didn't contact the father as case manager, didn't identify any potential services. They basically made the determination it was all futile without seeking a declaration of that from the court. Does that distinguish it from this case where they did say they did do a case plan and they did attempt to provide some contact and assistance to the father, but the circumstances of COVID and incarceration made it limited on what they could do.
And thank you, Your Honor. Actually, you were jumping ahead to one of my points I had set up for later, so I'm happy to skip to it now. Admittedly, there was contact in this case and there was a case plan, but make no mistake, that contact and that case plan was everything short of substantive. Despite knowing where my client was since July of 2020, the agency made zero attempts to contact him until 2 months after the CHIPS case was opened and made only 7 contacts in the span of 12 months. And the district court made a finding that in those first 2 contacts, which took place in October and December of 2020, the agency did not actually offer him any services or make any independent inquiry into what services may be available to him while he's incarcerated. It wasn't.
Well, can I ask you this? Was your client represented by an attorney during these proceedings?
My understanding, Your Honor, is he was not represented by an attorney until I believe it was early February of 2021, and I was not that counsel.
Okay. Was there another attorney appointed on his behalf, though, during
the
proceeding? Is there any indication in the record that the services were not available or complaints made to the court, because there's numerous hearings that go on. And part of the function of the court is to make a determination as to whether the agency is doing what they're supposed to do and the parent is doing what they're supposed to do in a CHIPS matter. Is there anything in the record with regard to that?
Sure, Your Honor. And my review of the record in trial testimony shows that my client, and actually I believe the district court made a specific finding that my client didn't understand his role in the case and didn't understand what the caseworker was supposed to do. So I don't believe he had an understanding at that point, nor was it addressed pretty much until June of 2021, when I brought a motion to reopen the case after he had been terminated, when he was misidentified as a participant to these permanency proceedings.
So once you were brought on, I mean, is it a fair statement if someone's represented and they have an attorney that it's the obligation of the attorney to make sure that the client understands what's going on, right?
And certainly, Your Honor, I can't speak for the court-appointed counsel that represented him at that time. But I would point to the fact that as he did understand, once his rights were terminated, he didn't understand why, because his attorney didn't explain it to him. He promptly did
seek
out counsel.
You mean in the first proceeding where he was...
Correct.
It was a termination of unknown fathers because his paternity hadn't been established at that time.
Correct. Even though the court had ordered back in September of 21 that it was supposed to open family court files to establish paternity. And at the, I believe it was the IDH, immediately before the admit-deny hearing in the permanency matter, the district court made an explicit finding that the agency was going to work with father to help him establish parentage. But then less than 2 or 3 weeks later, it turned around and terminating him without really knowing why.
Can you explain, Ms. Kat? Oh, excuse me.
No.
Okay. What services starting in, we'll start in September when I think of 2020, when you say, I think you say the first contact occurred in October, but whether you think it should have started earlier, what services were available? What does the record tell us about services that were available to him in the various facilities that he went to as he was placed in different places that he did not get, that were reasonable, accessible, you know, et cetera, under the definition of reasonable services?
Certainly, Your Honor. And there were actually two services that were identified during the trial per the case manager at the St. Cloud facility he was at in September, one of which he wasn't eligible for, but the second of which was the challenge incarceration program. And I think it's
telling. And he did that challenge incarceration program. So he went ahead and did that. I guess whether the county told him about it or not, he knew about it and he entered that and that was good. Are there other services besides that that he was not given that were available to him in the facilities that you claim he should have been provided by the county?
And Your Honor, I would point to at the time, nobody had asked and nobody knew in September of 2020. I think it's telling that the only inquiry that the agency made was, Mr. or Father, do you know what services are available to you? He said, challenge incarceration program, and I don't think anything else. And the inquiry stopped there. Now, we can't go to trial and look back and say, well, yeah, services turned out to be non-existent. I think the focus, especially in ADB, was that they at least have to attempt to identify those services. And if they don't...
But if there weren't... I mean, I looked, read through the handbook for the Challenge Incarceration Program. And it seems to me that there's a lot of good programming and the same kind of programming, albeit perhaps even more intensive because it's 6 months long, than you would get outside of prison. You know, inpatient, I think, is usually like 90 days. But it seems like he was getting a lot of programming. So even though the county, you know, and I think the district court judge characterized the county's efforts as minimal or minimum or something, he was getting programming. So couldn't the court say, geez, under these circumstances, he was getting what he needed, you know, to be a parent to this child?
And certainly, Honor, I think that is exactly kind of what I'm getting at, is he was engaging in what he was able to without any assistance from the county, without any engagement from the county. But yet the county, without even exploring options for a transfer of legal or physical custody or any other permanency options, it proceeded to terminate him twice. And I think without any indication that, or without looking forward at all at what options were available to him moving forward. I think I was just going to say the record is pretty clear that the agency made no inquiry into what services were available to him in phases 2 and 3. And I think a point that I'd like to make is that ADP focuses on the fact that 18 months after post-permanency, that was an ascertainable time in the future, which was reasonably foreseeable. And so here we have 12 months at the point where he's released. I apologize, Your Honor. I'm getting a little ahead of myself.
Yeah, no. That's okay. So I've got a couple more questions. So
sure.
What is it in the record? Where in the record can we find what it is your client is seeking? Because I read the testimony where he said, no, I don't want to take the child away from the child's current placement or away from the child's siblings. So where in the record do we look to see what it is your client is seeking in this? Besides certainly not having his parental rights terminated. But I don't see any place where he's talking about, and I want this child with me full time. I'm going to be the parent for this child. I'm here. Meaning the custodial parent. I'm sorry. Let me clarify that, because there's lots of ways to be a great parent.
Certainly, Your Honor. And to be clear, at trial, what Father testified to was that he did not intend to rip the child from any contact with his siblings, but rather he wanted to remain in the same community as the child's half siblings. And I believe I'd have to find the specific site, but I believe at some point he requested the ability to be given a chance to parent, to work a case plan. And I'd be happy to look for that site while counsel is making their rebuttal argument. But I believe he's asking for the opportunity to work a case plan and to be part of this child's life.
Can I ask you a question just with regard to the law in this matter? In these cases, I think the district court judges have a very difficult time in these cases, because they're basically deciding that at this point in time, can this parent or not these children? I mean, isn't that a fair statement?
Absolutely, Your Honor.
For any TPR trial, and in so far as he's going to be incarcerated for some period of time, at least until the child is more than 26 months old or 26 months at least, before he could possibly be available to parent this child. What is the court to do? I think the evidence is conclusive that he can't, because of his incarceration, parent the child, right? At the point in time when they had this trial.
And Your Honor, I'd again kind of point back to my original point in this matter. The court cannot make that determination for the first time post-trial submission. ADB makes very clear that the agency has to go about requesting futility of efforts in a very specific way. They didn't do that in this case.
Well, here's my issue, because, you know, and we often have people who are addicted and have chemical use problems. And the court is often faced with the prospect of the 1 year timelines for the child, achieving permanency, at the same time dealing with parents who are saying, all I need is another little more time, a little more time. And the court has to look at the circumstances that presents itself at that point in time, not what happens in the future. Why would your client, because of his incarceration, be given more time when we wouldn't allow the parent who is not incarcerated, who hasn't cleaned up their addiction, more time?
And Your Honor, I think it comes down to a particular fact that in this case, my client was never even given that option to begin with. And I'd like to point the court's attention to a very specific finding in the district court's order, which
takes
place.
What do you mean that option? What do you mean by that option?
The agency didn't offer him the ability to participate in any services for the first 2 months of this case and then made perfunctory efforts after that case. He deserves to have a chance to actually work a case plan, which didn't exist.
Was he already in prison then? Or
correct, Your Honor. I see him out of time. I'd be happy to reserve for rebuttal at that point, unless you'd like me to answer now.
Is that okay, Judge Hooten? Okay.
I would prefer she answer your question unless it's up to you.
Oh no, Judge. Go ahead. Go ahead. Go ahead, Ms. Is it Casa?
I'm sorry.
Is that the proper pronunciation?
Yes, Your Honor, Casa. Could you repeat the question one more time for me?
I think it's your question, Judge Siegel.
Oh, about my question about wasn't he in prison? Is that it? Yeah, he was in prison then, though, wasn't he?
Correct. And again, the agency made clear from the start and throughout the district court's findings that it was his fault he was in prison before the child was even born, and that at that point it was a foregone conclusion that he was ever going to be able to parent this child. I think that is a striking statement to make throughout the district court's findings, specifically on page 29, paragraph 40.
Okay. All right. Thank you. And you will have 5 minutes for rebuttal. Ms. Scher, go ahead when you're ready and identify yourself first.
Thank you. My name is Kathleen Scher. I'm an assistant county attorney in Otter Tail County, and I represent the respondent in this case. May it please the court and opposing counsel. I think I'll start with addressing the court's questions that were posed to Ms. Casa. The father was in fact incarcerated. He had been incarcerated since June of 2020, so 2 months prior to the child's birth. He actually had requested an interim commit, and so he had not been sentenced and officially committed to the commissioner until, I believe, October of 2020, but he had been in the Minnesota State Correctional Facilities. I think a lot of time was spent reviewing that recent case of ADB. And so I did want to point out, as Judge Hooten has pointed out, it is a vastly different case. There are a lot of differences in that case than the current case before the court. And I think the biggest difference is in that case, there were no efforts that were made by the agency. And the futile distinction was that the agency had taken it upon themselves to determine that efforts were futile in that case. That's vastly different in this case. The agency did not give up and, in fact, never did ask to be relieved of efforts with regard to the father in this case.
Isn't it also a matter of law that any determination of futility has to be made by the court, not the agency?
Absolutely, Judge. Absolutely. And I think my distinction is the agency had taken it upon themselves to make that determination prior to even asking the court for that. And in this case, the agency did not do that. They never requested that from the court, and they moved forward with efforts as best as they could in this case. Secondarily, another big difference between ADB and the case before the court today is that the trial court focused very little on father and father's efforts in that case, or father's ability to reunify in that case, despite spending a significant period of time addressing the mother. It's not the case here. The district's court's majority of the order here focused on father's decisions, some of which were made prior to the child being born, that did have a significant impact on the child. And while we should not focus just on past things or past decisions of parents, they do have an impact on the children. In this case, one of those big impacts was the decision of the father here to request an interim commit to commit a first degree controlled substance offense for the second time, and that ended up in him in prison with very little ability to have any interaction with this child or work services.
Well, I want to ask you a question that I'm going to ask Appellant as well. Did the father receive CD treatment, chemical dependency treatment, as part of his challenge and incarceration program?
He did, Judge. He did.
Go ahead.
In fact, the agency, one of the caseworkers testified that they considered the treatment that he was receiving there to be in compliance with the case plan, requiring him to do CD services.
Okay. And was there any evidence of other programs that he wanted in addition to what was available through the challenge incarceration program?
The only other evidence that was brought forward with regard to anything that was available to father was that there were some parenting books that he could have requested from his caseworker at the CIP program, and he did not do. Other than that, there were no programs that were available in any of the facilities that the father was at during his incarceration that would have been able to provide him with any services due to his incarcerated state and the pandemic.
Was there any evidence that these parenting books were available to him? Was that ever communicated to him? Is there evidence of that in the record?
There is, Judge. In fact, the father himself is the one who testified that he could have asked for those from his caseworker in the CIP program, and he declined to do so.
Then, could you speak, Ms. Sherd, to the visitation discussion in the briefing and any efforts by the county? I appreciate. Well, you can tell me about, obviously, there are going to be barriers because of the pandemic, but video visitation, et cetera.
Yes, Judge. And as you've indicated, it was largely dependent on the prison facilities themselves. And one of the barriers that we ran into was that the father's name was not on the birth certificate of the child, which was something that was needed by the prison, or at least conveyed to the agency that was needed by the prison in order to facilitate those visits. Now, there's discussion in the record that there was a visit facilitated by the paternal grandmother in August of 2021. However, that was done without the agency's knowledge, and I don't believe it was in compliance with the prison rules at that time. And so while a visitation was facilitated, I certainly don't think
I thought it was that the reason why was that the application was filled out incorrectly by the county case manager, and then the county case manager went out on a medical leave, and then nobody ever kind of did anything. Isn't that right?
Well, initially, that's the case back in February of 2021. That was the case that was rejected because of that. But a secondary problem was that the father's name did not appear on the birth certificate. And so visitation was denied on that basis. Whereas I can't speak to why visitation was granted with grandmother as far as father and his mother. But that was the understanding of the agency with regard to visitation of the child. I think the other important thing to point out here is that when this case was initiated, and even farther back than that, the mother in this case had two other children. The father was aware of those children, was aware when the Child Protective Services started with regard to those children, and in fact acknowledged problems of the mother. And then this child is subsequently born in August of 2020. Father is aware of the child's birth, aware that the child could be his. And when when the child was first born, as the record reflects, mother was doing very well with services. She had actually been doing very well up until about a month after the child's birth, and the agency started having concerns with regard to her sobriety. At this point, the father had already been involved in that EBC hearing, had already been advised of his rights, had already been placed on the record, the timelines and so forth with regard to the cases. And as the court will see from the record, father initially declined to do anything in this case, even though he was contacted and talked to about services and case plans until he was determined to be the biological father of the child.
Can I interrupt just for a minute? So going back to the our recent presidential case, the ADB case, the district court judge did place a lot of emphasis on this futility finding. Mm-hmm. And the district court judge was the one who heard the testimony, was able to assess credibility, et cetera, et cetera. So why shouldn't we remand this matter back to the district court to consider the case in light of ADB?
Well, and Judge, I think that the other huge point that's different with that ADB case is that there's indication that the father had been a parent prior to the children being removed and had failed to engage in services prior to the children being removed. That's not the case here. This is not the reunification parent. In fact, it's a parent that's never been a parent to this child. And even the bond with the child-parent relationship is not there. Alternatively, looking at the child's best interests, this child's been placed in this permanency home with a relative caretaker for their entire life with their half siblings. And so I think looking at that and looking at the paramount consideration as being the child, it weighs heavily in termination of the father's parental rights in this case.
So could the court under the statute and in light of ADB still rule, even though the county never asked to, that the county's efforts, they didn't satisfy reasonable efforts, but I'm going to find that because he was in prison and because of the pandemic and because of the limited resources, that there was really not much more the county could have done anyhow. And so it was futile. I mean, do you think the judge has that authority under the statute?
Absolutely, Judge. By the same token, I think the agency has the ability not to request that finding. I think the agency certainly could have in this case, but didn't, because they were trying to determine whether it was appropriate to continue with reunification efforts and to provide as many services as they had available at the time. I think it's also telling that even in the testimony at trial in September of 2021, there was no plan. The father had no plan with regard to how he was going to care for this child. There was no stable residence. He had no knowledge as to whether or not he would be able to take this child into a halfway house. No employment. Nothing in the case plan had been met as of that point. In fact, the only thing he had really worked on was that CD treatment piece. And he still had a significant period of time to go, as the district court pointed out.
I'm sorry to interrupt. What is it in a case plan that was not complied with that could have been complied with?
And Judge, the only thing that could have been complied with at that point, the only service that was available through the incarceration was that CD programming. But it still forecloses his ability due to his own actions and the incarceration itself of being able to set up a stable home for the child.
I see. Can you answer, in your view, did the district court find, I mean, the district court made a finding, I think, that further efforts would be futile. Is that right?
That's correct.
In terms of efforts to that date, did the district court make a finding one way or another about whether the efforts to the time of trial had been reasonable? What did it mean when it said they were minimal? And did it make a finding one way or the other about the efforts to the trial?
Judge, from my recollection, the court had indicated that, I'll classify it as they were disappointed with the limited contact that the agency had with the father at that point. With regard to reasonable efforts, I guess I'll characterize that as, I'm not sure, since the district court did find that there weren't any other efforts that the agency could have made, there weren't any services that would have been available, the agency provided the services it was able to provide. It attempted to work with father.
If a district court finds that, let's even leave aside ADP, et cetera, because the county says we were making efforts, claims that it was making efforts at the point of trial. And if the district court finds that the efforts, however, were not reasonable, why should the TPR stand? I mean, isn't that a critical element? of upholding a TPR?
Well, respectfully, Judge, I think it is, unless the court has determined that those efforts are futile in itself. And I think that's as the panel is.
It seems like in the end, I'm sorry to interrupt though, that you have to return to the futility issue, which the county wasn't seeking and the court did sua sponte. And I'm not sure why that's not problematic under ADP. I understand the difference in the cases in the county's perspective, but why the district court can decide that. So you're saying even under ADP, a district court could decide sua sponte that efforts have been unreasonable, reasonable efforts have not been made, but I'm going to determine that further efforts would be futile.
Well, and respectfully, Judge, I don't recall the court ever finding that the agency had not made as reasonable efforts. What the court had indicated is that the efforts of the agency was minimal. That doesn't mean that they weren't reasonable in the...
That's my question. Yeah, that's my question about what the court found. And I'm not sure what the court found.
The court found that there was minimal efforts on the agency's part. And a lot of that centered around in the findings with regard to the contact that the agency had and asking the father itself what services were available. And that goes back to there weren't any services available. And so the court looking back on that and saying, well, the agency could not have made any additional efforts because the services weren't there, I think is makes it his ability to make that futile finding. I apologize for that clumsy recitation that right there, but I think that confirms that the court's able to make that. And so I see my time is running out, but I would just thank the court and ask the court to confirm the prior court's findings.
Judge Siegel, may I ask a question? What do you believe is the strongest grounds for termination in this case? I know the judge decided on a number of grounds, but what do you think is the strongest ground?
And respectfully, Your Honor, I think that there are equal points for each one that the judge did rely on. I mean, they're different. There's different requirements under each one for a reason. And I think that the court laid out that the agency had met those requirements in each case. And so, you know, if there had only been one strong ground, that would have been the one that the agency had petitioned on. But in this case, there were numerous grounds that the agency could meet.
Well, the one of the grounds was failure to register. And quite frankly, I haven't seen that utilized before. And I don't think the facts are in dispute that he didn't register till 11 months after the birth, and he was supposed to do it within 30 days. I guess I'm just surprised. Are you aware of any cases where that's been utilized as a ground for termination?
Not off the top of my head.
I frankly have never seen it before.
Yep. Not off the top of my head, Judge. I think in this case, taking into consideration the judge's entire order, there was a lot of argument that the agency didn't do what they were supposed to do. And the agency is the one that's supposed to provide the services. But that doesn't mean that the parent can sit by and do nothing and take no responsibility for the decisions they made or the lack of effort that they made on their part. And I think that statute itself strongly weighs in that favor and that there is some responsibility on the fathers in these cases. Thank you, Your Honors.
All right. Thank you, Ms. Scher. Ms. Casa, you have 5 minutes for rebuttal. Go ahead when you're ready.
Thank you, Your Honors. I think it's important to note that not only at trial now, but today as well, the agency has doubled and tripled down on its own futility determination by exerting considerable focus on three facts. The first is appellant's criminal history, which took place entirely before the birth of the child. And second, it's focus on its interim commit, which again took place a month before the child was born and a CHIPS case even existed. With counsel's argument throughout this case, I would argue that she's asking my client to know the ins and outs of child protection before he even has his first child. And the third point that counsel continues to bring up is appellant's singular comment from October of 2020 that he wanted paternity determined before he put too much into the case. The agency has used those three facts over and over and over again to distract from their complete lack of reasonable efforts it provided to father for over 12 months. Now, the holding of ADB is very clear on page 13 of the decision. ADB holds that the statute governing the district court's utility determination contemplates an affirmative request of the agency, requires a prima facie determination based on facts contained in the agency's petition, and relates to the cessation of the agency's interim or ongoing efforts before termination at trial. The agency can't take two bites of the apple at trial because ADB makes clear that it's the incorrect procedure in making a futility determination when it's a when it takes sua sponte action, makes a determine based on clear and convincing evidence offered at trial, and then justifies the agency's overall efforts after the fact. In almost identical fashion to the agency in ADB, the agency in this case did not follow the correct procedure. The agency decided for itself, without ever requesting a court determination, that reunification efforts were futile, and so it decided not to make them.
When did the agency decide that?
Your Honors, I would argue when this child was born. As you've heard in
Ms. you're drawing that from, you're inferring that from what you think are the limited contacts made. So they must have decided. There's not an affirmative record where the agency said, yeah, we declared futility and stopped doing anything. But you're inferring that they did, in fact, consider them futile because they didn't do enough, right?
That's correct, Your Honor. And I think the most important fact is that visitation didn't happen through any act of the agency in this case. It likes to point out that the incorrect application was originally submitted in February, but the record shows from testimony from the follow-up caseworker in June of 2021, or maybe it's 2020, apologize, I'm getting my years mixed up, but later on in the case, incorrectly submitted the application again and hadn't done any follow-up as of the time of trial. So I think that's incredibly important to point out that there wasn't an effort made to foster the relationship between parent and child.
Can I direct your attention to footnote 5 of ADB and the final paragraph of the section referenced there, you know, subparagraph 8, that in the alternative, the court may determine that provision of services is futile and therefore unreasonable under the circumstances. And I think we've kind of asked this in different ways, but could we conclude that while the district court, you know, was relying on A7, you know, which ADB, you know, makes a decision on interpreting that part of it, that the court nevertheless, you know, the facts are such that he was getting CD treatment and related treatment, but the timing, you know, was such that he wasn't going to be able to become the custodial parent of this child in the reasonably foreseeable future. I mean, I'll stop talking because we're close. What do you say about H? Sorry for sucking up your time, but go ahead and respond.
Your Honor, I would just respectfully point out to the original point that I made towards the beginning of my argument that the court in ADB actually found that 18 months after permanency wasn't beyond the reasonably foreseeable future.
But wasn't an older child? I mean, at least a somewhat older child. We've got an infant here. I mean, well, since infancy now, I don't, you know, at least I'll have to look at the birth date, but, you know, and that in a year is a much longer time in an baby's life than maybe somebody who's 6, 7, 8, although that's an incredibly long time in a young child's life as well.
And absolutely, Your Honor. And I think the problem we run into with that is that my client was never even given an opportunity to utilize his fundamental constitutional right to parent, and it's cut off because he was incarcerated prior to the child's birth. And I think based on that, I would respectfully request, I just know my time is up, so I would request that this court reverse and remand the district court's decision to terminate and offer Father a case plan so that reunification would be possible. Thank you, Your Honors.
All right.
Can I ask an additional question?
Yes, go ahead, Judge Hood.
I just want to ask the question about the failure to register grounds for termination. Is there anything legally or factually incorrect in the court's order with regard to that ground for termination?
And Your Honor, I think I hammered home on this pretty hard in my brief. I think that that argument must fail because of the county's failure to follow up with its order in the EPC order to adjudicate him as paternity. I think that it's very important that both sides, not just parents, are held accountable for what the court orders them to do. And if the court...
But what does that have to do with registration?
Well, Your Honor, my understanding in reading through the various statutes is that if my client was adjudicated as the father prior to termination, he would be entitled to adoption notice, which would eliminate part of... I don't have the exact statute in front of me, but it eliminates the requirement or the availability of subdivision 1B7 because he's entitled to adoption notice. That was it's a two-part of the statute. If Your Honor would like, I can certainly pull out that statute now.
Okay, that's all right. I just wanted to have, since I questioned respondent about it, I thought it'd be fair to ask you about it as well. Thank you.
Certainly.
All right, any further questions from the panel? No. All right. Thank you both very much, both for the written submissions.